Hello and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering podcast. This is a special episode, which is actually a recording of a podcast that I did for Adopt for Life as part of a series that they do. Now, they're a Canadian-based voluntary support agency for families who've adopted, and they run a specialist group for men who are experiencing violence and aggression from their children. Now, they refer to it as AFCA, which stands for Aggression Towards Family / Caregivers in Childhood and Adolescence. Or we might call it child-to-parent violence. And in this podcast, we chat about why the group was set up, what is the purpose of the group, and some of the unique perspectives that we get from men and their experience of living with children of violent aggressive behaviour. I'll put some links to the work that their Adopt for Life do, and you can find out a bit more about the work they do. If you're a Canadian man and you want to join, you can follow the links for that. But if you're in the UK, I'm sorry, it's not open to men in the UK, at the moment anyway, and I hope you enjoy it, and it raises some interesting questions about how men or fathers respond to the experience of living with children whose behaviour can sometimes be violent and aggressive.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for this month's special edition Snack and Chat, a recurring segment where we come together and discuss topics that are top of mind to adoptive, kin, permanency, and customary care communities across Ontario and beyond, as we know with Al, who's one of our guests here. My name is Catherine, and I have the privilege of hosting these chats with professionals, lived experts, and generally just incredible people within our communities. If you aren't familiar with Adopt for Life, we are a not-for-profit charitable organization that provides supports, resources, advocacy, and a whole lot more to families like yours. You can learn more about us and gain access to valuable resources by ensuring to click both the like and follow button on our public Facebook page, or by going to www.adopt4life.com. I am so very honored to have two amazing guests with us as we talk about the successful dads or dad presenting support groups with both Al and Murray. So before I begin on how we'll be using this platform and what you can expect for the next 45 minutes or so, I do want to take some time and do a land acknowledgement. I do recognize that we are coming from all different parts of this beautiful earth. I personally am situated on the I reside on the traditional territory of Anishinaabe, Huron-Wendat, Haudenosaunee, Ojibwe, and Mississaugas of the Credit People within Treaty 19. That is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. I do ask that you guys also take time to reflect on your own personal territories and treaties. We do land acknowledgements really to reaffirm our commitment and responsibility in improving our relationships between cultures, and really as a first step in being able to rebuild relationships. It's a way for us to understand local Indigenous peoples and a way to acknowledge the historic as well as ongoing devastating effects of colonialism and racism in the name of assimilation across Canada. It's a way for us to consider how we each can, in our own way, action forward in truth, spirit, and reconciliation, as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, and the river flows. So we do know that this is a recorded snack and chat. However, we do want this to be an engaging and interactive lunchtime for you all. So please feel free to comment below, to ask questions, or engage with what it is that we're talking about. We also love to know where you guys are coming in from or where you're logging in from. So please feel free to jot down your city in the comments. The good news is that I know how to get a hold of Al and Murray. So if you do have a question or comment, please feel free to put it in the chat below, and I'll find them for you, so don't worry. We want to let you know that this segment is live, and this segment is shared publicly on social media, meaning that it's something that can be accessed at any time. So we just ask for you to remain mindful of any personal or sensitive information that you're going to be sharing. that was a whole lot of me talking in a whole jumbled mess. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a moment and share about who our amazing guests are. This is in no particular order. First, I'm going to talk about Al. Al is a qualified social worker. He became a social worker in 2013 and is a social work practice educator as of 2015. So he works with adoptive families and foster carers, and he's been doing that for over 20 years and trains and advises parents and carers who struggle to manage challenging behaviors. He also is able to draw on both personal and professional experiences, and he's qualified as an NVR practitioner. He lobbies on adoption issues and is the author of the weekly Adoption and Fostering podcast, as well as blogging and writing articles on areas such as childhood challenging behaviors and aggressive behaviors, or CPV or APVA. He speaks across the UK, and he has also co-authored a book on CCVAB. Oh, I got those acronyms right.
That was a mouthful, wasn't it? Well done. You're doing really well.
I tried. So next, absolutely not least, we have Murray. So Murray has been married to his wife for 30 years and is an adoptive parent to three boys, two who live with FASD and one with an intellectual disability.
Sorry, just two boys.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Boys. I gave you a third boy there. So I Two's apologize enough. For that.
Okay. Two's enough.
Okay. Two, not three, guys. He's worked in tax administration for over 20 years. He's also taken several courses, including NVR and polyvagal, and he's now considering a potential career shift to working in providing mental health services. Murray and his family have been living with AFCA for about 5 years, which was made much worse by the pandemic, which I think a lot of us can relate to. He has been a part of many online communities, including Adopt for Life, over the past several years, and this is how he became familiar with Al. Al is through some of these communities. He noticed that a lot of the participants in these groups are women and were women, and unfortunately, this is a lot of the time the case, and women are more likely to seek help with men, which we've seen over and over again in many communities. When Adopt for Life first offered this group, the Dad's AFCA support group, in 2023, he was an eager participant, and since then, he has been helping co-facilitate the group with Al. That was a lot of me talking, guys, and I made up new acronyms and I gave you a new child, Murray. But we made it. We made it through.
Did we mention how many children I've got? Because I just thought, I'm not sure that's
didn't.
In my... Yeah, that might not be in my head. I've got six children that are adopted. I've got five daughters and a son. And we were foster carers for some of those. But so yeah, it's not a competition, but yeah, lots of them.
But you win. That's okay. No, it's all good. Maybe that's where I gave one of your kids to Murray, maybe. And I do remember learning about your children and was just struck with, I can't imagine six. I appreciate both of you. I appreciate both of you and everything that you're doing. So we are here chatting about the Dads or Dad Presenting Support Group. And I know this is kind of a newer initiative, and it kind of came about because in our AFCA support groups, Murray, like your bio said, has been typically women. And so this support group came about with a grant from Health Nexus. And this is kind of what we're talking about, because it's important to talk about men and dad presenting, men presenting, mental health, and it isn't talked about a lot. So, Al, this question is for you. Why do you think having a support group specifically to fathers or father identifying persons is important?
Well, I think that there's a whole lot of things wrapped up in that question. And I think that, I suppose, the caveat to all of our conversations and everything I'm going to say is that we don't want to gender stereotype in terms of male kind of roles within families and homes. And we don't want to sort of stereotype men in terms of how they are. But I think we can kind of broadly talk about men in a way that people will feel comfortable with and make sense of. But there are always people outside of that. So just that's a caveat. I don't have to say that every time. So I'm just putting that at the beginning. I suppose my experience, a little bit of history, is that my experience is I often will... this is a relatively new topic that we're talking about in the UK, which is where I'm based. And my experience is that if I was to put on a group or a training, that it would be 90, 95% females in the audience. And I think there's a whole host of reasons for that. I think one is maybe about roles, men maybe taking a more of a, you know, provider role, women more of a nurturing role. And I think that's part of it. But I also think that part of it is how men look for support, and how men address issues in the home, how men kind of interact with other men. And I think those are the things that I often see. I would often have a line of women at the end of the session going, I wish you could talk to my husband. And there's nothing worse than sort of like some poor husband being dragged along by his ear, kind of going, talk to this man. He's got some things you need to hear. And that's the worst possible scenario. And I've had that on occasions, like, you need to talk to him. And I was like, oh, good grief. That's the worst possible way to interact with men. So I think the thing is that we need to be able to appreciate that men have a very different experience of the phenomena in the homes. And I think that is, you know, again, all of those generalizations, but I think men biologically, whether that's social learning, whether a whole raft of reasons why men feel very differently about the experience, means that they are often quite silent about that, and are often there's a lot of stuff going over. But also I think on a basic level, how men get support, women are often very face to face in their relationships, and that they'll sit over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and they'll talk. Men are much more shoulder to shoulder in that they'll go and do something, and they will then incidentally maybe touch on issues. I've got a friend who's a good, really good close friend, and we go running. At the end, he'll say, how's the kids? And I'll go, oh, tough. And he'll go, mine too. And we'll go, yeah, fine. And my wife will come back and go, what did you talk about stuff? And I'll go, well, yeah. So it's acknowledging that. I'm not sure if I've even got to your question yet, but that feels like the background to all of this. And I think the vision of Adopt for Life was to really to find a location where we could provide a space where men could interact just on those terms. So it wasn't through the female kind of lens or the female model. It was much more about us coming together, talking about it, how we, you know, not all, you know, slapping thighs and talking about hockey. Though we have talked about hockey. But it's about just being really free to talk about things in a way that is really genuine and authentic for us as men. And some of the stuff that we're maybe not particularly comfortable at talking to our partners about, presume, you know, again, gender stereotypes about females, real male models in the house. So does that make sense of the question?
100% it does. And I think it was funny. I was laughing as you were going, because I voluntold my husband to join the group. I was like, you're doing this.
The case for the defense rests, Your Honor.
Exactly. So I'm going to change this up a little bit. So I was going to have a bunch of questions for you, Al, and then a bunch of questions for you, Murray. But I think, like, hearing Al talk, I'd love to kind of maybe put you on the spot a little bit, but to kind of come to you next and ask about your motivation for joining the group. Like, I think, Al, you gave us a great background as to why this is important. I'd love to hear kind of your experience, Maria, as to how did you come to the point where you were like, this dad's group is something that I need?
I would probably kind of agree with Al that men do stuff side by side, shoulder by shoulder, doing stuff together. Like, a lot of times that's totally it. And as we kind of navigated everything, there was a lot of times that different practitioners would say, well, we'll connect you with somebody who can talk about this. But we didn't have, I can't say it ever happened. And there's a lot of issues. Like, I'd say a big thing is that with dealing with this whole AFCA CPVA is there's a lot of shame involved with it. People are afraid to talk about it. You know, like, when things are really bad here, we'd have police cars coming and our kid would be banging on the windows and the doors, and, you know, you might have to talk to them in the front yard. It really puts on quite a show. But realistically, it's like, I'd say it probably goes to the core of our identity. Like a lot of for fathers or father identifying is the identity is from doing, you know, being the provider, being the carer, the protector. And when you're having to protect your family from your child, it's hard. But having, you know, I've been doing a lot of counseling for a while and I have benefited from that. It's traditionally more, I've had to encourage my wife to go and I'm glad that she is, but it's a lot more, I've really benefited from the community of dads. I will attest to what, or affirm what Catherine was saying, is a lot of dads, I think, were AFCA spouses who were similarly voluntold. There were two or three guys that came along and we made some good connections. I guess because I know, because I've been there and I've, you know, we've gone toe to toe with different agencies. And we had a meeting about a year ago that I had to, you know, one of the supervisors being an absolute twit and I had to basically rip her a new one. But, you know, it's like, you know what? You don't get it. You people just don't get it. There's such a disconnect between what is taught and what is real. There's, you know, you don't know it until you're in the front lines. I said to Catherine earlier, you know, we've got the bruises and the scars from having to do this. And, you know, I've said to a lot of people, there's nothing like being able to come and sit along. Somebody say so hard things. It's like, oh, you wouldn't believe it. Yeah. Actually, I would. We had the police at our house many, many times. And it's, you know, it's so so shameful, yet there's nothing we can do about it. It's nothing that we have done. And, you know, it's just the power of community is so important. And, you know, when we're singing these things, like we had a meeting not too long ago and I saw a dad, he was in a really dark place. And I connected him before and I called him and say, hey, how are you doing? And he says, it sucks, but you know what? There's a lot of power in just say, you know what? And, but I guess to kind of go back too, is for the families that were offered to us, we are trying to be that to others. Mm. You know, nobody gets it until you've been there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the incredible success I think has been, is that there is a core group of people who just are like, yeah. And it's not necessarily, I find giving solutions or getting the answer, but it's just having someone go listen, who, like you said, gets it. And they're like, yeah, I know what it's like to have the police called, to have X, Y, and Z happen. I think that's, it is important, I think, for dads. And again, the dad figures, we're going to all encompass that in, to have a space to talk about it. And this kind of comes up to the next question. Al, this might be more for you, but it could be for both of you. You kind of touched about like the terminology we use is AFCA, like to the experiences of a dad and a mom or the two, the male and the female, kind of stereotypical, can be different. And you guys kind of touched upon that a little bit. I'm wondering if there's any more differences that you guys can talk about, or if you kind of, at least in the group, have you kind of seen a change in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some real nuances there that I think anyone who's experienced sort of living with a child that's violent and aggressive and reactive, you know, and we I guess, and again, in all, this is me putting caveats in front of things, we don't want to villainize children and we don't want to make them into perpetrators. We understand that the majority of their behavior comes out of a vulnerability. And in that vulnerability, making other people vulnerable makes it really complicated dynamic within the home. And everyone knows that, but I wanted to kind of make that clear that we're not painting children as that. But I think some of the challenges become really specific when, as a father, you know, we're at the long end of a long generation of fathers, you know, millennia of fathers. We live in a culture where fathers have a specific role. And then to stand in a house and watch your child assault your partner and your partner to have told you, do not step in. Mm-hmm. The impact on you as a human being is one thing, but as a husband, to watch your wife say to you, if you step in, it will be infinitely worse. So I just let me take, even if it's and I said, just verbal abuse. Let me deal with it. And as a father, to be told to stand back, stand down, is so visceral. And what does that do to you in terms of, you know, I think the narratives we often have as parents of children like this is that it's, you know, if I'd done that when I was a child, my dad would have wiped the floor with me. But I wouldn't have even thought of doing that. You know, it wasn't even on the menu. And so father's coming away with a real sense of a lot of emotion, a lot of really, like, I'm having to literally clench my fists because I know if I step in, I'm not sure where I'm going to go. And my, you know, this is a big child being horrendous to my wife. Because if this happened in the outside of a bar on a Friday night, it would be legitimate for me to act a different way. And so men often will come to the group and we'll have these conversations where we're going, yeah, I have no really smart answers about this, but actually we totally get that frustration. And men going, I know that this is the right thing to do, but it doesn't change how I feel. And where do I park that feeling? And that sense of impotence, or sort of that sense of just, like, I always thought that I would be the dad and the captain of the ship. Not from this group, but I had a guy, I was talking to another father in another group, and he said, I used to think I was a good dad. And now, and he was crestfallen because he thought, I'm just this impotent guy who stands and watches this behavior unfold. And I've been sort of put in this position of not being able to do anything because, you know, I worked in youth groups as a young man, and the rule in the youth group was that women dealt with the challenging behavior because men, just being a man, often ignites the behavior, or it's fuel on the fire. So having a step back in your own home is an awful position for men to be in. And we can go on. I think, sorry, I'm just going to, just butt in. When I'm talking too much, just butt in.
Keep going.
I think the other thing as well is that men and women have generic terms, men and women have very different perspective. I think that often the dynamics within the home can be quite frustrating in that you'll often get women who sort of err towards nurture, men err towards kind of more outward looking. So you find that, you know, and this is often addressed in NVR, but it often plays out in real terms in that men are sort of saying, you're too soft on this kid. We, you know, one day they're going to have to get a job. Or this isn't the real world. We're creating this world where they can get away with stuff. And females, mums are sort of saying, you're too strict on this dad. So I'm going to become more nurturing. And dad says, well, I'm going to become more strict. And then you get a separation between the two. And I think we've acknowledged that. And we've touched on that about challenges in relationships between men and women, really difficult. And at the heart of it, you know, this isn't what we signed up for. You know, we wanted to be parents and we weren't, and we see that the very foundation of our relationship, that kind of that cornerstone of our lives being eroded, and this child in the middle. And what do you do with that? And again, then the group is often a place where, you know, it's not super deep at times, but people being really honest about some of that stuff that is really painful, and it's palpably really difficult. And we don't have great answers, if I'm being honest with you, but it's a place where we can park it. And people, you know, oftentimes it's all going, totally get it, mate, totally get it. And people just feeling heard. And it comes from a position of knowledge, not a position of intellectual understanding. Oh, yes, that must be difficult. It's like, yeah, we had some dark days. So I don't know whether there's other aspects of that that Marie can probably add to, unless
I would agree too that I think there seems to be two different ways that parents engage or disengage. My son would come after my wife, so I would have to, he was as tall as her, and you know, you get somebody angry, I would have to step in to physically intervene to protect her and our other son. But there's other times though too when it's more verbal, like there's a couple of dads who just, I can't take it anymore. They just disengage because it's just so hard to deal with the disrespect and the verbal abuse. And it's, sometimes it depends. From the groups we've been participating in, it can be both parents. It can be either parent that goes that does either. Mm-hmm. I would say probably the dads are more likely to disengage though, because they, it just it seems to be such an assault on their manhood. But you know, I feel for single parents too, who have to deal with it all, and there's like no respite. Mm. Something else I was thinking though too is that language. If a child, a lot of our kids have other challenges as well, and the acting out behavior is language. If they don't know how to express something, we have to decode the language. Is like, what are they saying? Is it? And I've seen things, you know, a lot of times that anger is actually scared. Mm. You know, something has flipped in the background that they don't know what's going on. Like we had an incident the other night where our son wanted to go to a store and the store was closed. Well, he went for a walk and he ended up finding some place that he was calm. But the problem is he, the carers that were with him lost him. So there was a search. Eventually, oh, this is where he is. All's good. Again, he's oblivious to the trauma that he's causing. There's a lot of going on. Something that we've talked about though is NVR. Is one thing I really liked about the NVR is it's many programs are about supporting the kids. NVR is building up the parents, building the connections. And I can see over the last, we took the course a year ago, and since in the last year, I can really see it building up strong parents, like parents who, you know, 6 months, a year ago, were just beaten down from fighting with the system, are able to stand back and say, okay, you know, what about this? What about this? Mm-hmm. What about this? They're able to stand up against, you know, the system. I think NVR is kind of designed against to fight. Well, it's to more kind of resist the behavior, but we've been very successful in using it to resist the system. And, you know, the ideas that they have, well, this is something that you guys are doing. No, we're doing all that we can. It's just there's such insufficient resources, and a lot of people that worked in the social services field before the pandemic the bottom dropped out because they couldn't work for so long, and they've gone on and found other jobs.
And that's what I found. This is kind of like filling that gap, and it's interesting that what you're saying, Murray, is that as a woman, I never thought that my husband would need the same type of supports that I need. And that's so, so ignorant of me. And hearing you guys even talk now, it's like, he just seems to be fine. And I'm always having meltdowns and I'm always dealing with it. And I'm taking trainings and I'm trying to do NVR and polyvagal and all this kind of stuff. And I just assumed my husband was good because he doesn't always talk about it with me. Mm. So for myself, it's very enlightening to hear both of you be so open.
I mean, we're perhaps a bit unusual. We're probably in touch with our feminine sides. I'm not sure. I'm probably not. I think we're normal, and we're just maybe that way inclined. But I think one of the issues as well is that I think men, again, generalizations, men are fixers, women are talkers. And so if you bring, like, I say this all the time in my relationship with my wife, is that she'll come and she'll park her problem with me. And I want, she doesn't want me to fix it. She wants to park it or just share it. And that is the solution. The solution is just her to go, you'll never guess what happened. Da, 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 da. And then I'll go, oh, well, what you could do. And she'll go, now we've learned 27 years in, we've learned. Yep. And she'll go, I don't need a solution. But what she hasn't realized is she's left me with a problem. And I tried, right, so I can't resolve. So she's resolved her kind of particular, you know, she's gotten something off her chest. She feels much better. I am now going, well, if she did this and that, but she doesn't want me to give answers. And so that, again, broad stereotypes, but I think that can often be a position where men feel like, what do I do with this? Because I'm wired to fix problems. You know, if you show me a broken, flat tire, I fix the flat tire. Whereas my wife's saying, the tire is flat, I do not want you to fix it. I am then caught in this kind of loop that I can't resolve. And I think that then men, that quietens men. I think men can be a little bit more introverted. And I know that I've oftentimes seeing myself as the fixer, not wanted to share my inner world, because actually I am just adding to the problem by then telling my, so the way I see my problem is, if I tell my wife my problems, she can't fix it, And she's not wired to fix it. She's just wired to listen. But I feel like I'm creating more problems. So I think sometimes, you know, we've had some really frank conversations about I'm not saying, you know, anyone who's got a partner coming to the group, don't worry, you know, if you're saying, what the hell are they talking about in this group? they've always been wholly respectful towards our partners. And I think people have, there's a lot of compassion and empathy. But oftentimes it just reflects this kind of like this slight, you know, we're trying to, sometimes out in communication, we're trying to hammer square pegs into round holes that, I personally often come away from a conversation with my wife going, well, she's really got a lot out of that, but I feel like I've just had loads dumped on me and I don't know what to do with it now. And I think that some of the conversations we've had with her have been around some of those challenges that men like, I don't know what to do for my wife. And I am stepping in, and some people have had to, I was thinking as well, one of the challenges with our children, and this is, I think, a really repeated phenomenon, is that mums get, talking mums, not moms. I'm from the north of England. We would say mams, but it will not go there. So mams get the worst of it. I think that's the reality. And why that is, we can hypothesize, you know, is it because of, you know, primal wounds, all of that kind of thing. So husbands then maybe trying to readjust the family dynamic so that they step in and become a primary caregiver, which is nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But actually then it's this a family system that's kind of slightly skewed, where husbands are in a position of protecting their partners all the time and taking over care because a child won't listen to the mum. Like the mum, the children have no respect for the female figure. And you kind of go, this stuff is really weird. And they're still trying to hold down a full-time job and doing the full-time care. And wives are kind of going, you have to come and, you know, you have to be the voice of authority in this because they won't listen to me or I can't. So really complicated dynamics that come out of these children who are incredibly vulnerable. You know, our experience has always been that my children, not all of my children have sort of manifest challenging behaviour in that sense. But the heart of it is children who have been irrevocably hurt. But that spills out. It spills out into our home and it recreates some of that chaos that sometimes our children have emerged from. And sometimes we're just like, I think as dads, we're trying to fix the problem. And it's a problem that can't necessarily be fixed. So, you know, again, I'm just talking. Please feel free to butt in.
Is that been your experience, Murray? Like, is that?
I think I'll pretty much, something advice that I've heard is if our wives or partners are coming to us and saying, it's important for us to know right at the beginning if it's a park it or a fix it.
Yeah,
that's something that I have a hard time doing. But again, I guess something too is like with challenging behaviors, a lot of times kids come at an older age. Our younger one came to us straight from the hospital and he's the one that's had all the challenging behaviors. But again, you know, he's had a very stable life since birth, but who knows what was going on prenatal and who knows what generational stuff is there too.
Absolutely. You know, I'm wondering, Al, what is your kind of hopes for groups like this? Like, I feel like this, the AFCA Dads group is the only one that I have seen or that I'm aware of at least. What are your hopes from doing groups like this and focusing on dads and having that space for dads? What's your dream sort of with this all?
Oh, my dream. We've gone really high now. So I think that it sits in the ecosystem of support that we need around families, because actually we need acknowledging that dads have a very different, that dads potentially have a very different experience of the home environment or how they perceive it and experience it, that we can create a better home environment so that husbands and wives can, you know, husbands and husbands, it's a terribly modern world, husbands and all of that kind of thing, that we can bring harmony to the house, that some men can have a safe place where they can talk about stuff. And like Murray said, we've had some really frank conversations of men who've been really honest about how difficult life can be at times. And, you know, and Murray and I can both testify to that in our own experience. in a way that I think the group is really frank. So I know we've got a no swearing rule in this podcast, but in our group we don't have a no swearing rule, because actually and it's quite lighthearted, that, but in a sense that, you know, to actually repeat the words that have been said to your wife in front of you, we all in the group, to kind of like, there's a sharp intake of breath, because we all go, yeah, I'd want to kill them, but we're not going to.
Yeah.
And we can acknowledge the complexity of that, you know, that some of the language that's used and how it makes us feel it when that's used against people we love in our own home, and we feel impotent. So I think that the groups, you know, I don't think we're going to reach this nirvana where we're going to start a men's choir and kind of sing on stage at the Adopt for Life, you know.
X Factor.
That's not where we're heading. But I think that we need to be, we want to be a really helpful part of the ecosystem of support around families, because we acknowledge that, you know, as I say in groups often, is that, you know, if I had a solution to this, do you think I'd be talking to you guys tonight? I'd be on the Bahamas. I'd be the richest man in the world. I don't have but what I do see is that we build a support around families so that they can continue, that they can thrive at best, but they can live together and there can be a sense of peace and love in family. If we can be part of that, a brick in that wall, then wonderful. That will be a lofty aspiration.
What about you, Murray? Do you have anything else to add? Like what? I feel like you kind of answered it perfectly, but in a kind of dream, I'm going off for interview questions. I'm just going as we put you guys on the spot here. But like, what do you think, ideally, what can this group do to help? And what can these kind of dads groups help move forward? Like, what has your experience been, or kind of supporting the other fathers? Like, what do you feel like groups like this can help with?
I've actually found participating in groups and talking to other dads to be actually really healing. Mm. You know, we're not the only one. I would say probably even going back before this, I've always been kind of one that's kind of trying calm waves at work and trying to maintain good relationships, checking in on people. Even though I'm professionally an accountant, I'm, you know, there's the stereotypical with the green eye shade and the abacus, that's going back generations, but I'm a much more social in maintaining relationships than I am kind of focusing on the hard numbers. You kind of try, I try and look past like what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But by providing support for dads, it enables families to be stronger. And
yeah,
if we've got stronger families, we're able to maintain better connections. Like our son lives close by, but you know, we just couldn't keep him home anymore because it wasn't safe. Mm. And it's hard for families to be in that position.
Yeah. It normalizes, doesn't it? It can kind of, because we can often so easily slip into, this is just us in our little house. And I think, sorry, I'm butting over you, but it normalizes it for families that dads go, oh, I thought it was just me. I had the dark thoughts. It was just me. And can I add as well, because you were talking, Marie. Sorry, I've just totally cut across you, Marie. I apologize. The other thing I thought was that perhaps we can build into a knowledge base, because actually I think the lens of the support that the organizations offer is often through the female lens. So I think that there's a little potential here that I think working with Maud, that we're going to kind of produce something that actually articulates the findings. When I was asked to do the group, I was really honored and mildly terrified. So I thought, right, I shall go out and I shall Google, and I work in a university local here, so I've got academic access to, and I looked, and there's not one single document on this. There's not one piece of academic research across the world. This is a void. This is, you know, you may feel like that this is just one small group, but this is the small group. There is no other group like this in across the world. And I'm doing some of the research for another thing, or I'm trying to, and looking across the world, this is the tip of the spear. There's no one else doing this. And if we can produce something that can help other dads, then wonderful. That's not the reason we're doing it. That's a convenient side product. Certainly, you know, we want to maintain confidentiality and all that kind of stuff. But actually, if we can help move the conversation on so that the support that other agencies are providing for men isn't just through this focus of, you know, women are in the groups, women are in the support groups often. It's predominantly women led. You know, I think the staff are all female, aren't they? You know, at Adopt for Life. So, and it's 50% of the families we're supporting. So I think that there's that's the really high lofty aspiration, not the male voice choir. Though maybe one day, I'm not close to that. I don't know about you, Marie.
That's not me.
We are slowly coming to our time, but I do one last question. No, I love it. I have one last question for both of you, actually. So I'm going to put it out there, and whoever wants to answer first, they can. But what advice would you give to a father, male-identifying person, who is experiencing AFCA, who is watching this, and who hasn't reached out? What advice would you want to give to another dad?
Get help. Talk. Break the shame. From a Bible Christian perspective, there's power in shining. Like when you shine light on something, it breaks the darkness. But you know, even no matter where you are, if there's so much power because people won't talk about stuff, when you start talking about stuff, it breaks the systems down. The system has power in silence. And when we advocate against the silence, when we shine light where there's different crises around, like in Ontario, there's a huge homeless crisis or housing crisis. And when we start talking about solutions, instead of treating, for example, drug addiction as a choice, at some small amount, but a lot of times drug addiction is people trying to calm pain, trying to heal pain. If we find ways to deal with the pain that we're suffering, then that breaks. We have to find good ways to deal with hurt. There's all sorts of different types of therapy that are out there that are good. I've tried different things. There's all sorts of experimentation with, like, ketamine is something that is being used in very strict protocols. Magic mushrooms are being experimented with. There's all sorts of trials going on, stuff that 50 years ago was like, oh, that's horrible. Now it's being experimented with as ways to improve, to address some of the problems that is in our society.
I appreciate that. Al, what about you? What advice? Do you have anything else to add?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 25th of March, join us online. It's a lunchtime session, so dip out of work, tell your boss you're in a meeting. And come, you know, we welcome all dads, all different flavors of dads, all different types of dads. Come online, don't turn your camera on if you don't want, just listen if you want. Don't join in if you don't want, just listen. But I think that Marie's advice is absolutely right. Shine a light on it, because in the darkness, it flourishes, and it becomes this phantom that is overwhelming and all consuming. And to sit in a room and go, I'm not the only one, that I'm not weak, and I'm not going mad, and I'm not this ineffectual man who's, you know, just not able to keep his household in order, you know, all those ugly stereotypes. Get help, really, and listen. You know, even if you just listening to this and then come and join our group, we also have a WhatsApp group that occasionally just when someone's got an interesting thing to put on, we do. But also people can email me and Marie, and we can, you know, if we've got specific questions, people put in topics and go, hey, could we talk about this week? Or this is going on at home. Anyone got any tips and advice? And reach out. Absolutely 100% reach out. And that is painful. It's a step. There's a real element of risk, because what if you are the only one? But I'm telling you, you're not the only one. And we can all attest to having dark days and probably thoughts that we're not proud of, if we're being honest. You know, and even just to speak them out just releases the power on them. You know, it bursts the bubble. So yeah, reach out, do what Marie says, you know. 25th of March. And how do people get involved? How do people, what do they do? Who do they email?
Good question. So I'm going to make sure that the, I like the little plug there. I'm going to make sure that there is a link for everyone to join in the comments of this, in the posting of this. Yeah, I'm not that fancy. Put it here. I wish I knew how to do that, but we'll make sure that there's a way. You can absolutely also always go to adopt4life.com and you can see the AFCA supports there. Any final thoughts from either of you as we say goodbye?
This actually isn't just an issue for adoptive families as well. I've heard of families, other families that have kids struggling with mental illness or other physical challenges. It affects them as well. This is not purely an issue for adoptive families.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Thank you. And I know that's something that we continue to hear, that there is such a lack of supports for families. So our hope is that this is going to continue to grow and get more funding and more awareness, and it can actually support more families. Because Mary, you're right. This is not just an adoptive situation. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both so very much for your candid answers, for allowing me to go off script with my questions with you all. I appreciate your vulnerability, and I really hope that this reaches other dads who are in the thick of it, because I know the impact it really has on families. For everybody, again, we want to thank you so much for joining in. Please feel free to post comments or questions. I know how to get a hold of these men, so don't worry. They can't run away from us. And we want this to be a resource that people can find. We want this to be the light that people need. So thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thank you so much.